The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Naomi Lambert from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share articles with you from the Assembly, which publishes in-depth reporting on North Carolina at theassemblync.com. Well, today we're starting with an article from the Faith and Religion section entitled Imagine All the People. It dates from February 2nd and the reporter is Storms Reback. 45 minutes before the monks arrived, I got dropped off in a nearly empty parking lot a mile and a half south of downtown Salisbury. It was 9:30 a.m. on January 17th and there was only one other car in the tool rental depot lot. Its driver, Sherman Black, and I inhabit two different worlds. The owner of a transport company, he spent 4 years in the US Army in the early 1990s. The closest I've ever got to serving was a 2-month stint as a busboy. He roots for the Washington Commanders football team. I prefer their arch rival, the Dallas Cowboys. And his 80-pound pit bull mix, Kilo, sports a flashy chain featuring a crown with the word King just below it, whereas my 15-pound Shih Tzu Butter is more likely to be found wearing pink doggy pyjamas. Despite our differences, Black and I were there for the same reason, to observe the Walk for Peace, the 4-month, 2,300-mile trek a group of Buddhist monks and their dog Aloka are taking from Fort Worth, Texas, to Washington, D.C. Black, who is 52 and has lived in Salisbury since 2007, was grateful the monks were stopping in his hometown, but hoped their visit would be more sedate than their previous two stops, footage of which he'd observed online. Kannapolis was too crazy, he said, and you'd have thought China Grove was New York City. Salisbury was calmer, but not by much. The cars starting to pour into the parking lot and South Main Street was much busier than usual. There's not traffic like this on this road ever, Black said. In the weeks following their October 26 departure from the Huang Dao Vipassana Bhavana Center, the monks' excursion flew under the radar. Chen Lei, a secretary at the center and part of the 10-person organizing team for the Carolinas portion of the trip, said that changed on November 19th, when a truck hit one of their support vehicles northeast of Houston. Two monks were injured. One of them, Bante Dam Pomasan, had to have his left leg amputated. Online, tragedy equals eyeballs. Word of the accident quickly spread, provoking questions. Did the truck driver intentionally ram the support vehicle? No. Why were the monks walking to D.C.? To ask Congress to make Vesak, the day that commemorates the birth, enlightenment and death of the Buddha, a federal holiday, and to promote mindfulness, loving-kindness and peace. And what was up with the dog? Aloka was a stray who started following the monks during a similar walk in India in 2022 and now rarely leaves their side. Commentary quickly shifted from confusion to appreciation, helped by a savvy social media team that has posted daily updates about the trip. The monks started blowing up. By the time they got to South Carolina, their Facebook page had more than 1 million followers. It now has 2.2 million and counting. The monks are hosting peace gatherings and giving talks outside of the Capitol buildings in all 9 states they are walking through. When I saw reports that nearly 20,000 people had greeted them in Columbia, South Carolina, I decided to avoid Raleigh. With fewer than 40,000 residents, Salisbury seemed ideal. Traveling to see the monks reminded me of when I drove to Ohio in 2024 to be in a solar eclipse's path of totality, a rare event that's worth going out of your way to observe. Some people I spoke with in Salisbury compared the Walk for Peace to the Summer Olympics torch relay, which passed through on its way to Atlanta in 1996. Black thought that the Walk for Peace resembled the Million Man March, which he'd participated in while stationed in D.C. in 1995. But a march carries a military connotation and implies protesting against something. A walk is a more neutral term. I wondered if that might encourage more people to take part. I was also curious to see what sort of people would come. 10 minutes after Black and I started talking, the parking lot was nearly full. As people emerged from their cars, I discovered the answer: a pleasantly wide range. What's going on right now? The morning was overcast and cold. Wearing a grey down jacket over a teal hoodie, Angel Black, no relation to Sherman, waited for the monks out of the wind under the overhang of the tool rental depot. A 43-year-old photographer, she was born in Salisbury, moved away after graduating from Catawba College, and after living in 7 other states, returned 5 years ago. The night before, she'd watched the monks walk past the Food Lion on South Main Street in China Grove. It was peaceful, she said. They approached, and everyone just... She made a calming gesture with her hands. It was really nice. She was so moved that she hugged the woman standing next to her, and together they cried. Buddhist monks have led peace walks for thousands of years, hoping to heal the pain that lingered in Cambodia from the genocide orchestrated by the Khmer Rouge in the 1970s. Mahana Gosananda organized one that gained international attention in 1992. Strife in the United States hasn't risen to that level, but for many it's uncomfortably high right now. Every time you turn on the television, it's something negative, Black said. When I saw this on social media, it was like a shiny beacon of hope. Black has been using her phone to track the monks' progress. Their website features a live map of their exact location. An even better indication of their proximity, she told me, is the flashing blue lights of their police escort. As soon as I saw these lights, I took up a position on the side of the road next to Lynne Barnhart, a 36-year-old originally from Miami. She had been living in Salisbury for 6 years and had started following the monks' journey when their Facebook page only had 10,000 followers. I've been so excited for them to get here because to me this is the next best thing before you go to see the Lord, she said. Just to be in their presence means so much. I know as soon as I see them, I'm going to start crying. Barnhart thought the Walk for Peace was a healthy antidote to the mass deportation immigrations and customs enforcement is currently carrying out, most recently in Minneapolis. We need to love each other. We don't need what's going on right now, she said. My family's from Sweden. We're immigrants, but the colour of my skin makes me superior to some people. It's not like that. We're just as immigrant as everybody else. As the monks passed in a single file line, a reverential hush rippled through the crowd. One person held a homemade sign that read, "You are changing lives." Others whispered, "Thank you," bowed their heads, or simply stood in silence. The monk's journey has largely been subsidized by donations. Barnhart had brought fruit, peanuts, bottled water, and roses. A few of the monks briefly paused to accept a flower or water. Most continued walking at their usual steady pace. Barnhart didn't mind that they hadn't accepted most of the things she'd offered. She was too caught up in the moment. "It feels amazing," she said, beaming. "It's just so surreal." Peace from within. I followed the monks up Main Street. If they paused to acknowledge the crowds lining the road, it was usually to give a flower to a small child or someone with a significant injury or disability. Every interaction they had was brief, until a 10-minute pit stop at City Hall, where they met with local officials. When the monks resumed walking, hundreds of people followed them, so many that a sheriff yelled at a man who was walking too close. A phalanx of police officers using cars, motorcycles and bicycles protected the monks from overzealous observers and oncoming traffic. Forming relationships with law enforcement agencies has been such an important aspect of the Walk for Peace that head monk Bhikkhu Panakara displays the pins they've given him on his saffron and ochre robe. The only other time the monks paused before their lunch stop was to ring the large bell Abraham Bonowitz, head of Death Penalty Action, had brought with him. Bonowitz explained that citizens of Delaware who opposed the death penalty had rung the bell outside prisons during executions until the state abolished capital punishment in September 2024. The monks ate their final meal of the day, they don't eat after noon, in a pavilion beside the NC Transportation Museum in Spencer, about 4 miles northeast of Salisbury. The crowd that gathered around them was so large it formed a wall 20 people deep. Susan Sherlock, who'd driven from her home in Valdez in the foothills, retreated to a bench on the edge of the crowd. A retired schoolteacher, she had enjoyed getting to know people who were as interested in seeing the monks as she was. "I stood on the side of the road for 2 hours just getting to know the people around me," she said. "We had conversations and learned about each other's lives. It was a coming together of strangers in a peaceful way." She wasn't as thrilled about the people who were selling Walk for Peace t-shirts or filming the monks as they ate. She tried to be respectful, especially when the monks walked past her earlier in the day. "I wanted to get some photos," she said, "but it didn't feel like the right time and place. I wanted to be in the moment and feel the experience." Asked what that moment had felt like, Sherlock was briefly overwhelmed by tears. "They're spreading a message of peace. I mean, how much better can it get?" Like Barnhart, Sherlock viewed the Walk for Peace as a remedy for some of the ailments plaguing modern-day life, particularly the depression and stress that she thinks social media and the news create. After she started having cardiac issues last year, she deleted all her social media accounts except for Facebook, which she tightly filtered. "I follow the news to get the need-to-know information, but I don't need all the spin and I don't need the drip, drip, drip all day long," she said. "I think that's where a lot of people are struggling right now." The inner peace Sherlock was striving to attain was actually the focus of the talk Panacara gave after lunch in Spencer. He told the crowd that meditation begets mindfulness, which in turn brings peace. The 30-minute introduction to meditation talk was chock full of insights and humour. "Probably for 1 hour of meditation, you spend 59 minutes following your thoughts," he said at one point. "But it's all right. I've been there, done that. Keep practicing, and it will reduce to 58 minutes. As the sun started to peek through the clouds, Panacara told the audience that a simple way to cultivate inner peace is to write, "Today is going to be my peaceful day," on a piece of paper and read it throughout the day. "In this world, we'll have no peace if in ourselves we have no peace," he said. "Peace is always from within. And the world will live as one." Every evening of their walk, the monks have given a public talk, until the day I planned to attend when they didn't schedule one. I was disappointed, but understood. After rising each day at 4 a.m. to meditate and chant and walking on average more than 20 miles a day, the monks deserved a night to themselves. By the time they reached North Carolina, the journey was starting to take its toll. Alocca had to have surgery on one of his legs and was undergoing physical therapy when I saw the peace walk. The monks, who'd slept in tents for most of their trek, had started spending the night in churches and recreation centres due to the cold weather. I planned to see them again during their lunch stop at the First Lutheran Church in Lexington the following day, but on my way there I noticed a crowd congregating along the road outside the Sheets on South Main Street. With easily accessible bathrooms and plenty of parking, it seemed like the perfect place to observe, despite songs like ZZ Top's Cheap Sunglasses blaring from the speakers above the gas pumps. At many of the spots the monks passed, it felt like time stood still and the fuss and tumult of a regular day momentarily disappeared. Many of the businesses in Salisbury had closed so their employees could observe the Walk for Peace. More than one postal worker had paused mid-route to take in the spectacle. Another postal worker I talked to in Salisbury didn't want his name mentioned because he'd called in sick. Even people who had gone to work found ways to participate. Ramsey Rimawi, a 22-year-old wearing glasses, a surgical face mask and a Sheets uniform, joined the crowd along the road during his morning break. Unlike everyone else I spoke with, he had no idea the monks were coming to Lexington until that morning. "I came into work and my co-worker looks at me and she's like, The monks are coming to town, Rimawi said. I thought she was pulling a joke on me. Rimawi wondered aloud if the monks were cold before telling a story about a monk who raised his body temperature simply by looking at a fire. Apocryphal or not, it reminded me of something Qian Lei had said the day before. By training your mind to be strong, you can overcome physical pain. The monks are a living testament to that assertion. After the monks passed the sheets, everyone quickly scrambled to get back into their cars, except two women who were standing still by the side of the road several minutes later. Fern Blair and Aria Novi live in Salisbury, but had been in Charlotte when the monks came through. They had waited almost an hour at the sheets for another chance to see them and considered it time well spent. Things like this don't usually come to you, said Blair, and if it does, I think you need to make the time and space to participate. She confessed to being surprised by her own reaction. I thought I would cry more, she said. I've been so sad for so long, but I felt some joy, which was really lovely. Novi expressed a similar mix of emotions. I definitely needed this today because I'm angry, she said. It's like every week we're losing more and more of our human rights. But hope had replaced anger as she watched the monks. John Lennon's Imagine popped into my head and I started singing it, she said. I was like, this is what he was feeling when he wrote that song. The moment had been so powerful they were hesitant to leave. They lingered, refusing to let go of that piece, until a car pulled up alongside them and jolted them back to reality. Its driver, late to the game and mildly frantic, asked where the monks were. They passed already, Blair said, pointing up the road. They're heading to High Point. For our next article by Brian Anderson, we go to the Elections Department. 70,000 voters must fix their registrations or face hurdles at the polls. And this was written on February 3rd. Through no fault of their own, more than 70,000 North Carolinians could hit an extra obstacle when trying to cast a ballot in this year's primaries. If they don't update their voter registration information to include their driver's license number, the last four digits of their social security number, or provide another relevant identification document, those voters must cast provisional ballots, which are rejected at much higher rates than other methods of voting. The missing information gained national attention during the prolonged 2024 state Supreme Court race, when Republican Court of Appeals Judge Jefferson Griffin challenged tens of thousands of votes cast by people whose voter registrations didn't include their driver's license or social security numbers, as required by federal law. A federal judge ruled against Griffin's challenge because it came after ballots were cast, but state elections officials ultimately said 103,270 voters needed to repair their registrations before they voted. State officials, party activists, and voter access groups have spent the last 6 months combing through the list of impacted voters on the State Board of Elections Registration Repair Database to encourage them to fill out the paperwork. In the first month, more than 20,000 North Carolinians got off the list, state data shows, but in the 5 months since, fewer than 12,000 people have had their names removed, including just 1,500 since candidate filing ended on December 19th. The State Board of Elections officials say many letters have been returned as undeliverable, while activists say phone calls have gone unanswered, and the few voters who respond are often confused as to why their registration is suddenly an issue. State Board of Elections Executive Director Sam Hayes said he thought more people would complete their registrations as the election drew nearer. I think people will be more motivated to get out and vote, and hopefully they'll understand that they need to correct their registrations prior to that, so that their experience at the polling place is as seamless as possible, Hayes said in an interview. Poll workers will give voters on the registration repair list a provisional ballot, which is commonly used by people who forget their ID or show up at the wrong polling place. The ballots count if election officials can determine that the voter was eligible. So as long as people on the repair list bring their driver's license, social security number, or another compliant document, their provisional ballots should be accepted. They will be able to vote, and we will hopefully validate that information, Hayes said. Every vote counts. In 2023, a Conservative activist discovered an issue with the state's voter registration form that had been used in Democratic and Republican administrations. The form appeared to make it optional for voters to enter their Social Security number or driver's license number, and in apparent violation of the 2002 Help America Vote Act, which requires one of those numbers. After learning of the problem, the Democrat-controlled State Board of Elections changed the form, but it didn't require the people with missing information to update their registrations. A state GOP lawsuit over the registrations was rejected because a President Trump-appointed judge said it was filed too close to the election. Griffin's challenge would ultimately lose in court, too. Meanwhile, Republican state lawmakers passed a sweeping new law in 2024 that shifted control of state and county elections boards from Democrats to Republicans. When Republicans took control of the State Board of Elections in 2025, the Trump administration sued, arguing that election officials violated HAVA by allowing thousands of voters to register without the required information. The registration repair project was part of the deal the NCSBE came up with to settle the Trump lawsuit. In the 2024 general election, about 60% of the more than 65,000 provisional ballots cast were rejected. For this year's elections, voters will have 3 days after election day to fix problems with their ballots, down from 9 days before the 2024 law. Last fall's municipal elections were the first in which people on the repair list who didn't provide the necessary information had to cast provisional ballots. But it didn't seem to be much of a problem. Of the 1,085 voters on the state's registration repair list who cast provisional ballots in the 2025 municipal elections, all but 17 counted, according to Common Cause North Carolina. The 98.4% provisional ballot acceptance rate among voters on the repair list is far higher than historical provisional ballot acceptance rates. The left-leaning advocacy group said the 17 rejected ballots included 10 black voters, 2 mixed-race individuals, 1 Hispanic and 4 white people. Common Cause director Sailor Jones added one caveat. The group couldn't quantify how many voters walked away from voting sites last year rather than go through the provisional ballot process. Jones says his organization has held a number of town halls to encourage activists to help comb the remaining list of more than 70 voters. We are encouraging people to look at themselves and their friends and neighbors, determine whether they are indeed on this list, and be a part of a movement that can really reach to their county boards of elections, Jones said. Motivated voters. Michael Bitzer, a Catawba College political scientist, warned against reading too much into last year's provisional ballot acceptance rate. "I would not try to make any correlation between the two election cycles," Bitzer said. "That's because odd year municipal elections have the lowest voter turnout. They tend to bring in some of the most politically engaged people in their communities. So while nearly everyone in the repair group who had to cast a provisional ballot in 2025 might have brought the right documentation, that may not be the case in the 2026 primary and general elections. In a higher turnout election, more people may have their ballots rejected." Many of the more than 71,000 people on the registration repair list as of January 23rd are infrequent voters. Only 2.5% of them voted in the 2022 primary election and 14.8% in the 2022 general election, according to data Bitzer provided. While the 2026 turnout could be higher due to the high-profile U.S. Senate race in North Carolina, it will still pale in comparison to the 2024 presidential election cycle, when 4% of those on the registration repair list cast a ballot in the primary and 31.5% did so in the general election. Votes for Democratic candidates are potentially more likely to be rejected this year than Republicans. An analysis from Bitzer and Chris Cooper, Professor of Political Science and Public Affairs at Western Carolina University, found voters on the original registration repair list were overwhelmingly younger and unaffiliated. The average age was less than 39, which was far younger than the statewide voter average of 51. Younger voters tend to lean more to the Democratic side, even when they aren't registered with a party. From the original registration repair list, 63% of voters were unaffiliated, 23% were Democrats, and 14% were Republicans. They've never had any problems before. Both political parties are trying to avoid any of their supporters having their ballots tossed out. Anderson Clayton, chair of the state Democratic Party, said the party's canvassing system flags voters who are on the registration repair list so volunteers knocking on doors can offer added support. "We're trying to do everything we can to notify people of this, but it is hard to help people understand. You are being singled out of the millions of voters in this state right now to go fix your voter registration." The state party has held 7 events mobilising supporters to get people off the list. After 4 phone banks and 3 in-person canvassing days in 2025, Democrats had made 80,000 points of contact, according to the state party. This includes leaving voicemails, knocking on doors, or reaching someone by phone or in person. Each form of outreach represents a contact point. 1 in every 108 registered North Carolina voters needs an updated registration to avoid having to cast a provisional ballot in the upcoming election. The NCSBE's registration repair search tool is updated daily. For anyone on the list who is a registered driver, the easiest solution is to submit an updated voter registration form through the DMV's website. Voters can also bring their driver's license or social security number to their county elections office. People who still have a letter from the State Board of Elections that was mailed to them last year can send it back to the County Board of Elections in the enclosed envelope. Anyone who doesn't address the issue online, by phone or by mail, can also correct it on their registration form when they vote in person. Voters who present valid identification should have their provisional ballot counted and be removed from the registration repair list. Hayes, the NCSBE executive director, said he hopes this is a short-term problem. Hopefully before the 2028 presidential election, this will be largely behind us. Well, that's it. We've run out of time for another for today, for the episode of the Assembly. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in next time. I'm Naomi Lambert for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is now available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, and if you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.